I tell you, is going to get worse unless we take action, like the article in the Idaho Observer, which most of you people would say, well, it's an anti-government publication, and so what? So they published something about Frederick Douglass. So what? So what? Well, you're going to walk yourself into tyranny, I'm telling you, unless you really, really take action. It is now, my dear...
It's really close for us. It's time to say goodbye.
Well,
if you would like a tape of Grandpa Al Lewis's commentaries on 9/11, which he did completely impromptu on 9/15, send a check made out to WBAI to P.O. Box 277, New York, New York, 10044. This week, about 17 or 18 went out. So you should be getting yours if you asked for it already. Yeah. So this is one way to take action. Your money goes directly to the station.
Right. Dred Scott Keyes.
Yes, sir.
You're the engineer in the next show?
I am the engineer.
Now, where are the people who are supposed to be here?
I'm the host. I am.
You're the host?
In
that uniform?
By the way, Roscoe Gordon has been up here many times.
I don't care how many times he's been up there, but you didn't discuss...
Listen a minute. I'm saying that he was also instrumental in Jamaican music.
I know. It says in reggae. Yes.
Ska music.
No, but I use this as in contrast to the belittlement of Michael Jackson when he said, you know, that blacks are this and this and this, and they didn't... Here's a guy who one hit sold over 3 million copies, and you know what he got for it? Zip.
Jack.
Zip.
Jack. You know, he left the business for it.
I know.
But we came, in fact, here in WBAI, we were instrumental in bringing Roscoe Gordon back into the music industry.
No. Why weren't you instrumental in going to all those white scallywags, put a gun in their ear, and get his money?
Yeah.
That's what I would like to know.
Well, there are many things, like the Blues Foundation, for example, who helped artists like that. But I'm saying that the whole thing is rigged. The music industry has been rigged from the... You yourself wrote, Fats Domino's hit?
Right.
Where's Fats Domino's money? Does he get his?
Well, he got from... What was his biggest hit?
Blueberry Hill.
Blueberry Hill. We know it.
His first check. Last time I saw Fats was... Where is it? At the Ritz? What's that place down the hall there? His first check. I went backstage, and he still remembers. He got $67,000, and he continued to get. He got. Because I'm not a pirate. I'm not a pirate, and I made sure of that. But let me tell you something. I read this.
And Fats, by the way, Fats was one of those people when it came down, because I remember when Sam Cooke or J.W. Alexander, for example, approached him in a New Orleans barbershop about writing and publishing, Fats told him to go off.
Right.
You know? And that's how he was.
Yeah.
And many black artists were like that.
Yeah. But there were those...
They didn't know the importance of it.
Of course. Well, they were never told.
Right. They didn't know. I'm just saying they were.
Right. They didn't have
to. You got to go, Grandpa. You got to...
Well, somebody better sit down here and say something intelligent. I've tried my best.
Until next time, this is Grandpa Al and Karen. Have a wonderful week.
Remember, we love you. Yeah. Take care.
one to talk with, all by myself. No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, I'm saving my love for you.
Chairman of the WBAI Local Advisory Board. The WBAI Local Advisory Board meetings are held monthly. For time and location, call our new voicemail number, 212-209-2919. As you know, the recent Pacifica settlement calls for a revision of the Pacifica bylaws and the election of local advisory board for our listeners' signal areas. If you would like information pertaining to the WBAI Local Advisory Board or the bylaws and the election committee, please call our voicemail at 212-209-2919 and leave your name and your number. Someone will return your call or write us at Box 954, Colonial Park Station, New York, New York, 10039.
And you're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. This is, of course, the program substituting for Radio Free Aaron, or maybe it's an extension of Radio Free Aaron, who knows. But we're going to be discussing this afternoon the bylaws process. And in the studio, of course, are Miguel Maldonado. And let me let everybody introduce themselves, so to speak. Mr. Cornick.
We've got Miguel Maldonado, who is the chair of the WBAI Local Advisory Board, myself, Lee Cronick, member of the Local Advisory Board for 2 years, and
I'm Joe Kay, and I'm an associate member of the Community for Progressive Radio and a longtime activist.
Well, let me just start off. Of course, there have been meetings of the Bylaws Committee every Tuesday at various locations throughout the greater metropolitan area. What has transpired so far? I guess we can ask all of those. I guess a lot of people have a lot of different perspectives about what has happened. But why don't we begin with Miguel. Miguel, in your eyes, what has transpired so far? What has been the progress of the bylaws process?
Well, one of the things that basically is taking place is a discussion and trying to listen what everybody had to say, and trying to condense different positions and make some recommendation to the national board, and without and I try to explain the structure of the discussion without really taking a vote in certain position that should be imposed by that group. Instead, Ray LaForest and who is a national board member, and Janice K. Bryan, they basically taking note what everybody is saying and trying to send us some kind of a condensed version of that to the national board and to present some kind of draft to the national board. My understanding is also that Carol Spooner put together a draft that will be discussed, I guess, in the coming national board meeting. And also, I guess, it will be also discussed by the different labs. I intend to have people in the next lab meeting to take a look to the Carol Spooner version and trying to see how we can accommodate the different groups who've been working in discussion in the bylaw.
So does that mean that the local bylaws committee will come up with its own draft?
Well, that's what we expect, but I think this is something that we need to talk more about it, because right now the fact that Carol Spooner will present a draft that is in the hands of different national board members, and it's a finalized version that she put together, and but will present to the national board. I assume that a lot of people will be interested. What the response of the national board members will be in reference to that.
Mm-hmm. Lee?
Yeah, just let me mention that that draft can be accessed by anyone on the internet. It's been posted at WBAI.org, WBAI.net, and on the Save Pacifica, I think it's savepacifica.net. And you can access it's called the Spooner Draft, dated July 26th. Actually, I think Carol put July 25th, but they posted it July 26th. So anyone who's on the Internet can access that new draft by Carol Spooner of the Pacific Bylaws. Let me also mention, since Miguel just mentioned the next local advisory board meeting, that will be on August 6th, Tuesday, August 6th, and it will take place at 1199. That's...
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
At 1199, the local.
310 West 43rd Street.
Right, 310 43rd.
West 43rd
Street.
It's an 8th and
9th. And we're going to try to start at 6 o'clock, and we would like to see all the listeners to go there. We're going to go over, and I will start recommending people to look at some of the draft, specifically the Carol Spooner. I want to try to, basically, the agenda will be some of those draft bylaw. Because I think this is the hard issue, and we are a little bit behind the international meeting coming up, and we need to be prepared for that. I think that I don't think that we should go beyond those 15 months that the interim national board established in the settlement, and I think they should be over and create the government structure for Pacifica, where the labs and the listener can have some kind of rights and some kind of what should I say, that well, they have some kind of power.
Right, an input.
It's an input, and what's going on the radio station, thank you, I just need to use the right word here. Some kind of input and what's going on the radio station, and so far, even that we have a victory, so we'll not be able to do that. It's a little problems, specifically with different labs around the different signal areas. And I hope that today maybe we should address some of the issues in terms of those problems, and also what caused the crisis. And I would like to address some of that, because it seems to me that for us to have a clear vision of those bylaws that we're trying to draft, we should have a clear mind what happened in the past, and to make sure that we don't make the same mistake. I would like to have an opportunity to address some of those issues.
Well, one of the things that we also hope to do this afternoon is to get a lot of input from listeners, and we're going to open up the phones, and I want to keep the conversation to a minimum, but we do have to go over certain things because Joe, in your mind, how have things been going as far as the process is concerned?
First of all, can I just say before going into that that I'd like to salute the producers of the program we preempted, Radio Free Aaron,
mm-hmm.
for keeping aloft the torch of Irish freedom on this side of the Atlantic. And I'd like them to be aware of the fact that many of us certainly understand that both the Irish people and the Palestinian people are both victims of a phony peace process. And speaking of process, some of us have been having some problems for a long time about this process of bylaw revision and election models. For one thing, we believe that the process has been entirely too narrow. It's not that anybody wanted it that way. Everybody has the best of intentions. The problem is, however, that in reality, in practice, what has happened is that a relatively narrow and small group of people have come to dominate the discussion. This group is narrow, for one thing, because about 90-95% of them happen to be white. They have few family responsibilities. They don't have small children. They come from easier circumstances. And these folks are able to go to meeting after meeting, sometimes two or three times a week, and participate in three-hour meetings on work days, for example. And, of course, the great, great many sectors of the listening audience are simply excluded. As I say, not deliberately, but that's the way it works out in practice. And that's because there is a certain political culture which some activists are comfortable with. And on the other hand, people who are up against it are not comfortable with and cannot participate. In addition, there are many activists who have other types of responsibilities, who are focusing on issues other than merely BAI and Pacifica. People who are struggling against police brutality, the criminalization of youth of color, a host of immigrant issues that are coming to the fore, environmental racism, a bankrupt educational system, or gentrification, and so on, or the fact that Washington seems to be hell-bent to destroy half the peoples of the world. And so how do these people are not being included in the process. Now, how do the people who are coming to these meetings week after week, how do they justify what is going on in the name of democracy? Well, they say that these meetings are given publicity, are announced on the air, and that if you don't come, it just shows you're either not interested or you're insufficiently interested. So then what's the problem? And we take the position that BAI, as a progressive institution, has an obligation to see to it that there is genuine popular participation, particularly by the key communities and constituencies who are oppressed and marginalized, and that they shouldn't have to adapt to conditions for participation that are not congenial to them, but that Pacifica and BAI should develop a process in consultation with those communities and progressive constituencies to make such participation real and effective. And so what has been happening is that you have a process which basically has left out so many of our communities and constituencies, and then of course they come up with an election model which again will tend to have the same impact, leave out a lot of these communities and constituencies from having a direct input and real empowerment. And that's why we call our model, by the way, rather than the subscriber model, we call it either a constituency model, we call it a model of inclusion, or an empowerment model.
Can I just
respond to that?
Well, I'm not only to respond. I think that the analysis that Joe made is, I think that we need to go a little bit deeper in terms of the and how we can create a constituency model that include the community. And I think that we need to go and see what kind of programs we have here in WBAI. I don't think that WBAI, first of all, I don't think that WBAI has a real community-oriented programming.
Why do you think that?
Because if you look at most of the shows, they're not addressing specifically certain communities.
I'm different with you on that, man. I mean,
well,
and every show addresses a particular constituency. Every show does that. Somebody likes it, somebody don't like it. It addresses certain people. So when you say that, be careful of what you're saying when you say community is not addressing these issues, because then you're saying that this station no longer represents the community. And if that's the case, then what are you really saying?
What I'm trying to say is, let me, for instance, give you an example. The immigrant community. You may have some news about what happened in certain community one day, but the truth of the matter is that WBAI don't have any specific show about the immigrants. And people can address that issue in any way they want, but the truth of the matter is that there is not such a show in WBAI. And New York is an immigrant community.
The question is, do we address that issue? I recognize that there may not be a show specific to that, but at the same time, there's the possibility that there could be a show. But the question for me is whether or not WBAI addresses those communities or addresses the issues of immigration.
Look, I had to recognize, and maybe I didn't explain that clear enough, that the listener maybe understand this. What I'm trying to say, the fact that we broadcast one day a demonstration or something that is basically on the news, to me that necessarily represents that WBAI is doing enough for the immigrant community and channel the programming. Okay, so that's what I'm trying to explain here. And when we're talking about, I think that we need to take a deep look into this kind of programming that before we target any community. When you come to the Latino community, I think that there's not that many Latino members. Why is that? Maybe you have some listeners who like to hear Sunday, the musical show that the Latino has, but that's not that many of us. Not all of us like only music. We like to see Latino shows that express all the concerns beyond musical shows. So to me, those two things go hand by hand. And believe me, when I came to the local advisory board, I remember to talk so many times about how would it matter to targeting the Latino community. And to me, it's those two things going together. You cannot just go around and talk about the constituency model when there is not enough done from the programming point of view. So I think this is those two things come together. And the other thing, those things take place. Those things take a lot of discussion and the creation of the model and how we're going to do it. My idea when I start working with Paul Sorber and the membership campaign is not only that I go to this community and ask those people, become members, because I don't think that people should enjoy a free ride here. Some of us have fought so hard for WBAI. We learned that issue. It's a process here. To bring people in WBAI should be the process when the people show that they really care about WBAI, when the people show that they are willing to share some power here in WBAI, that they are sensitive to all the ethnic groups that we say is New York, different communities working together. And I think you should create a process to bring different communities, and that process is for the people some kind of, I would call it, some kind of educational, and saying going to meetings. I mean, we should have in the requirement that the people should go to meetings, that the people should understand the issues. Because otherwise, it will be so many people that we have in WBAI who will take advantage of some people. They start talking to some friends, bring me 25 people, and we control the station. We control the program director position. We control general manager position, and we control the local advisory board. After the election, most of those 95% of those people that we brought just for voting will disappear. Just a few people will do the real work and pushing and make sure that WBAI stay alive. Just a few people, and that is the case. So maybe when we're talking about democracy, we're talking about democracy at work, people doing some work for WBAI, people trying to make WBAI stronger. So that's the way that I look. And to me, the model in bringing people without asking or no requirement, basically, you know, even to become a member, I oppose this kind of model.
Yeah, let me just go to one point that you brought up about immigrant communities, for example. If you look at the programming on WBAI, you find that though we may not have any programs that are specifically addressing immigrants, you find that discussions of immigrants come up on many of the other programs on BAI. I mean, we hear immigrant issues on Wake Up Call every morning. We hear immigrant issues on Africa Kaleidoscope, Housing Notebook, Asia Pacific Forum. Even Vasu Manchari's Education at the Crossroads, Our Americas, Mario Murillo's Our Americas. There are immigrant issues that are addressed, particularly Latino issues addressed on many of the other programs. So we don't have any specific programs for immigrant issues. I think if that's what you're looking for, that's, you know, possibly you understand.
What I'm trying to say is, for you to be able to target a community, you need to go beyond to have some discussion and one day in one of those shows. That's the way I look at it. You cannot just be too simplistic and expect that the immigrant community will come here in numbers of thousands because there's 5 minutes in this show and another 3 minutes in another show. And I understand that. Of course, I heard those. I've been interviewed as an immigrant so many times over WBAI in different programs.
And so, well, anyway, Ray LaForest has joined us on the line, and I want to welcome Ray.
Thank you very much, Prescott. Hi, guys. How you doing?
All right. We were just talking about, well, Joe actually brought up a conversation about the constituency model versus, I guess, other models which haven't been presented at this time, because I don't think there's, Miguel is representing, I guess, the other point of view. But I have to say that given, if you even had an immigrant show on for once a week, would that accomplish what you think it would accomplish, even though, despite the fact that we have discuss those issues throughout the whole week within the context of WBAI programming?
Well, I'm not trying to look at it as a way to have a 30-minute show once a week. For us to be able to target a community, I mean, if you see the statistic of New York City, the new voting in New York City, the majority of those people are immigrant. That one point or another, maybe today we are American citizens, but we are a big number. And to me, to target a particular community, to target the Latino community, it requires more than a weekly show, 30 minutes weekly show. It requires maybe some thinking from the station. It requires, of course, a program, but at the same time, how are we going to address that? The idea is not only that we're going to present a show, but the idea is that we're going to target that community to listen all the shows in WBAI, but at the same time, at least, you are telling that particular community, guys, this is your issue, and we're going to address your issue in a specific show, but at the same time, we are calling to you to listen to Democracy Now!, to listen to Wake Up Call. I mean, there's a bunch of these issues that we as immigrants are interested. And I've been involved in so many issues, police brutality and so on. But at the same time, myself as an immigrant, I don't think that we have enough, that we have done enough in that sense. So in conclusion, what I'm trying to say is that the model had to come from programming to the general manager to think. I think that we should make a requirement that one or the program director, the general manager, should speak another language besides English.
Well, I mean, that's a possibility. I remember Alternativa Latina, for example, does this show primarily in Spanish, but then you can go ad infinitum as far as Koreans or Chinese or Spanish. I mean, you could go on and on. I think the incorporation of programming around immigrant issues is key to WBAI programming, in that I think that there is a necessity for a program focused on specifically on immigrant issues. Joe, and then Ray, you can make your opening statements, as it were.
Okay.
Rather, Ray, go ahead.
Okay, Ray. Joe has, said go ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm sorry we are having trouble, I guess technical troubles getting connected. But basically the idea originally was to really use this show to have the listeners have a chance to call and express opinions and worries and suggestions. And so in that sense, it would have been different from other shows.
Well, we stated that at the beginning, that this would basically be what the show would be about.
Okay, great. So the idea was for us to kind of lay down, go over the what has brought us to where we are today, talk about the history of the, briefly, the history of the struggle for the last 2 years in New York City and longer in other areas, certainly 3 years in Berkeley, and as much as 10 years, one could say, when you talk about WPFW in Washington and KPFT in Texas, where the system really was taken over completely and transformed to a point where if you were traveling to those areas, you wouldn't even believe it was a Pacifica station. And how we started the fight from the New York area particularly, and how finally there was a so-called settlement that decided that there would be a new board, 15-member board, five of them elected from the former majority, five of them elected from the so-called dissident group, which are the people who are really now in the majority and they really fought very hard to take back the system, and five representing each one of the local advisory board. And this is in that capacity that the local board, New York local board, WBI, chose me to represent them. And how the once that new board was created, it moved very swiftly to make some changes that were completely necessary, such as put an end to the gag rule that prevented us from having the kind of discussion we're having today, for example, looking at the finances of the institution, and the situation was truly dismal when we found out that we were more than $5 million in debt, and discuss also how we got to the point, the work that has been done so far that was started first by the so-called WBA, at least locally, by the WBAI Exploratory Committee that was led by Lee Kronick there, who's in the room with you. And then once the new committee was instituted by the board through a resolution, the so-called the Pacifica Bylaws Revision Committee, which has five different committees, one of them from each area. In the local area, the people who co-chair it are Janice K. Bryant, who's a member of the National Board from New York, and I. And it also includes, at a minimum, of three members of the lab. And at this point, they've been mostly Anthony McCall, Lee Kronick, and Marion Borenstein. And of course, our desire is to see the lab have a regular role in this at this junction, both in terms of running those meetings and participating fully in the discussions on the air. Not only because the labs, even though this particular lab was not elected yet, it is a lab that is very representative of the different communities that we have in New York City. And technically, the lab, according to the resolution and based on the settlement, as I said, has to vote, three out of five of the local advisory board will have to vote to approve the section of the bylaws that deal with the mode and timing of elections, both for the local advisory boards and for the national boards, and also determine the amount of people that will be elected. So this is a very important role. Now, clearly, also both by the resolution itself, and because this is a people's station, the listeners themselves not only have the right, but should be part of that process. And this is what we're doing today. The idea, I guess, originally was to have a much more developed section that I just presented there. And originally we had decided that Miguel would speak about the beginning of the struggle all the way to the settlement, and that Lee would talk about after that the role that the local advisory board in New York City played with the exploratory committee, and that I would continue saying, you know, what work had been done so far in meetings with by the WBI Bylaws Revision Committee, and on the way to particularly beginning with you, Dwight Scott, when we started, we had excellent shows, I believe anyway, we tried our best at least to communicate basic information and education to the people. Because it is clear that as we get to a position when we have to, first people have to be brought into the system to realize the value of Pacifica and WBAI to the survival in that, you know, very dangerous new world that we're in now of neoliberalism, of a reactionary administration where people are in power, literally stealing the election in such a dastardly way, where their priorities are about war and wasteful waste of resources, about indecent profits at the expense of the majority of the people's needs in schooling, education, healthcare, social security. I'm at, right now at a meeting, at a conference about labor movement of Cuba, and discussing the incredibly criminal embargo against Cuba for 49 years, practically, well, almost about 45 years, and into some of the discussion we had American workers were members of the workforce who were worried about losing their pension about after working a whole lifetime. So these are the priorities that we think should be in this country for, to defend the interests of working people or producing the wealth of the society, instead of going to the pockets of very few, like the few that President Bush represents and his clique.
Can I make some correction here about the settlement? The settlement, Ray, you mentioned that the settlement, when you were elected by the local advisory board as a national board member, and I just want to correct that, because the settlement said that the chairperson is the person who's supposed to do that. Now, I was the only chairperson that decided to share the power with the board and let the board decide, make that decision. And the other signal areas didn't take place. Did not the chairperson select that person? And I just wanted to make that clear. And the settlement established that the chairperson is the one who select the national board member. I guess that just to make that clear, that it's not the local advisory board according to the settlement.
Yes, okay. I didn't want to go into detail, but you're correct. The chair of each local advisory board got to choose the individual that would represent the local advisory board on the national board.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM Unidad. This is a program, of course, by on the bylaws process. And Ray, before Joe speaks, we brought things relatively up to date. And plus, if we want to accomplish the mission of allowing phone callers to call in, we'd like to get an update about what's happening on the bylaws revision committee from your perspective, and whether or not, because the point has been brought up that there's been several drafts that have been presented, and whether or not the Bylaws Committee will present a draft also.
Well, okay. Drafts were not presented by every area. The one area that actually presented a draft was a Washington, D.C., and it was done actually through the person of one of the board members named Rob Robinson. So instead of, because of time constraint and other factors and the volume of work that was done, the draft was never presented as a summary of the work. And the reason for that, by the way, is that every area had different problems, different realities. In KPFA, the people who sat down, KPFA, by the way, is in Berkeley, that's our sister station in Berkeley, the 30 people, or usually even less, 20 people who sat down regularly to discuss those issues, had a high level of agreement. People have to know, if they don't know it yet, that KPFA, that's one station that rebelled against the coup, that attempt to subjugate the system, and was able to put 10,000 people in the street and won for themselves the right to get back control of the radio system. And as such, we're able to, in some areas, move ahead of us. And have an election for local advisory board. They were the first one to have members of the board of the lab and then the public as participant in the program council, which is a body that advised the program director as to programming. And they've made many steps. One of them I was there the other day during the last board meeting. They have a whole subsection that they created on a separate location where young people themselves produce programming that have won awards. So they really, in many ways, have done maverick work. Now, and because of that consensus, and because they already had election, they started from a higher level, much closer to the goal, and they were able to fine tune it. Now, for us in New York, we were really have very strong position of different groups that are very different from each other. I mean, for example, you mentioned some group feel that you should have a direct election where each person vote, and no matter where they come from. And there are other people who feel that because of the reality of discrimination, of lack of access of people to network and ability to participate fully because of the limitation within the society, that remedies have to be taken to allow variants of that electoral system. And that unless you do that, that many of the people towards whom the mission is directing that whole system will be left out. So because we have so many views, in effect, our report became the totality of all our discussions, became the minutes of all our discussions. Because, again, every time we had a thing, discussion, meetings, and votes, we would be split between different groups favoring various solutions and with many different, sometimes, subdivision around how to specifically execute them and so on. So because of that, there was no report as such. However, there were constant exchange of views between the New York people and the different, particularly Carol Spooner, the chair of the committee, and she's from KPFA, and the different communities throughout the country. And suddenly they have all the written documentation. So that at this point in New York City, we've had 15 meetings so far. Practically all of them have taken place in Manhattan. One of them happened in New Jersey and one in Brooklyn. And we're looking forward to hold them in other areas, different parts of New York City, in Long Island and Rockland County, which are part of listening areas. We also have discussed issues ranging from who can vote, who can run for office, what are the conditions under which you can vote. Should, for example, people be, and that's an area, again, where there are some divisions. One view is that people, to really participate and feel that they're part of something, have to be responsible for it. And the way to be responsible for it is to contribute $25 a year as a minimum, and or 3 hours of work. And also, there also would be different ways in which people who are working with other organizations, maybe that are supporting the system, could do the work with those organizations that would be accepted as a contribution to WBI and Pacifica. Now, other people feel, again, that if we apply the system this way, many people who should be part of this process will be excluded. So we have discussed many of those things. We have discussed local advisory board, the whole history of what got us there. We have discussed the last meeting we had. We took a look at the national board, you know, where it came from, what its prerogative, its responsibilities, its relation to the executive director, its relation to other bodies, such as the public and the local advisory board. We looked at whether, for example, the local advisory board should have more power than it has now. And that it should be elected by the public, and whether the national board should be elected by the public. So this is where we stand at this point, where we have covered a tremendous amount of material. In terms of the finished product, about a month ago, we had a presentation of so-called bullet points, which were the reduction, if you want, the summary, a very simple simplification, anyway, of all the different items that we had discussed, and to present us as a basis for us to start our discussion in a clearer way. At this point, we are moving to a new level, and we will be presenting two different models. One of them is from the Washington area, and then the other one is coming from Carol Spooner, but incorporates information and views from all the different areas. And they'll be taking the shape of real bylaws. So instead of just having bullet points, just referring to key areas, they will be taking the form of real bylaws.
Ray, you're saying then that the New York will not have its own proposal?
There will be two proposals. One of them from Washington, and then the other one from all the other areas put together being presented by Carol Spooner, including, by the way, some of the views from Washington.
Hmm. Okay.
And that will be presented within the next 10 days, because part of the reason we'll be had also is that the key person in that role is Carol Spooner. She has a father, and she has a serious illness in her family, and she was studying for a law exam, and so that has delayed the process. So meanwhile, that did not prevent us from continuing discussion. However, one thing I did not mention is that by the settlement, we were supposed to use the KPFA model as a beginning for our discussion, and that's what we did. But we're also looking at, even KPFA itself is making some changes in what existed. So at this point, by next week, no more than 2 weeks, we'll have, and probably by next week, we'll have in hand both of those proposals, and we'll be discussing them. Now, they are very different in the sense that they both use different languages, and they don't necessarily have the same order or importance as to which section of the bylaws should go first. And they also have different views as to the role that the power that the local advisory boards will have, and also those are the main difference between them, and also whether or not the national board should be elected by the public in general, or should they be members of the local advisory boards be elected to constitute the national board.
Okay. Ray, before we go to Joe, I know he's waiting patiently to say something, but I just want to be clear on the using the KPFA as the model. Is that a mandate or is that a suggestion?
That is a mandate. That is a mandate from the settlement itself that was incorporated in the resolution of the national board that dictated how this would become a reality. However, we were not bound to stay with it. Once we started as a model that has worked fairly well, although with some limitations here and there, we can look at it and change it technically any way we want.
Well, because there are some who think that it's not a mandate. But
it is a mandate.
Let's move forward. Joe?
Okay. Well, I came down here today hoping that I would be able to lay out some serious differences from the subscriber model, which is being put forward by a number of people, understanding that this is not a matter of technical or procedural differences, but what we have here is a difference in fundamental political philosophy. What we're talking about is recognizing that we're in the heart of a city which is majority people of color, where there is large numbers of people are up against it, who are poor, working people, and that furthermore there are large numbers of constituencies who are discriminated against, who are oppressed, such as, for example, the disabled community, the gay and lesbian community, prisoner community, rank and file labor. And there's always the pressure to bust unions. The youth, who increasingly are facing the difficulties, an increasingly hostile environment. And then the communities of color, which we have in mind, of course, the African and African descent communities, Asian, Latino, the native, and the immigrant. And the major point that we raise is that these communities should have direct representation on a local board that has the kind of input that would be able to influence important decisions of the station. And it would address some of the concerns, for example, that Miguel raised. But the problem is that the model of election model that is being used contradicts this. How? I'll just give very quickly, because as they say, I don't have time, and I hope that some of us will be given an opportunity at another time to lay this out a little further. WBAI has been estimated to have 200,000 listeners. 200,000. At the present, we have 17,000 subscribers. And based on what happened on the West Coast, there will probably be only 3,000 people casting ballots. 3,000 out of 200,000 listeners. This is not a listener empowerment model. Only 1%, 1.5% of the listeners will actually get a chance to have some input, have a vote as far as governance is concerned. Furthermore, even if we were, even if there were candidates from the communities of color, we go further than that. We go further than that affirmative action that says, and the model on the West Coast that says you have to have X number of peoples of color. We say not only must we have peoples of color, but that the ones who are chosen should be chosen by their own community. That the gay community, for example, should not be voted, the gay candidate should not be voted by the straight community. The gay community should be able to elect, and we're not talking about selection, we're talking about election, through a series of meetings and town hall meetings and discussions, that they would be able to elect their own candidate who would represent their interests and their own point of view. In the same way, for example, the African-American community, that we think that they are entitled to have representatives of their choice, and that these people, therefore, should be empowered. The community should be empowered. And I believe if they are empowered, then I think there's going to be reflection, a further reflection in terms of programming, in terms of the general constitution of the station, in terms of personnel, in terms of directors, and so on and so forth. The basic philosophy, and I will close here, but there's so much more I would like to say, is on the subscriber model, that you have to earn the right to a voice in people's radio. There should be some kind of membership requirement gained by this minimum of $25, which I call a poll tax, or 3 hours of volunteer labor, which I call workfare. And to me, this is backwards, because the obligation should be for Pacifica and BAI to find the means of encouraging people's participation to make it as easy as possible for them to be part of the decision-making process.
Lee, you've been quiet over there.
I wanted to go into a few things. First of all, we're going to come back to Joe's presentation, and I'm sure if...
Don't you have any...
Yeah, I do. I have a number of things I want to go over. I'm only going to mention that I hope the listeners who are on there and waiting to call in, and we do want to...
We're going to do that at 2 o'clock sharp.
Right on. There's several things I wanted to talk about. First of all, Ray mentioned the fact that Miguel and I decided with the local advisory board that we would, back in October last, when the station was still under control of other forces, set up an exploratory commission, a committee of the local advisory board, to deal with bylaw revisions and elections. And we invited people from many of the listener groups in the area. Those people know who they are, the Concerned Friends, the Elections Committee of Concerned Friends, CDP and Save Our Station. People came from a lot of different groups, in addition to people from the local advisory board. We left it as an open committee, membership-wise, and we took no votes, right or wrong votes. We were there basically to gather information, and the only thing that we did come up with that was substantive, other than a lot of information that was passed on to the bylaws committee when they were formed by the Pacific Interim National Board, was a proposed resolution by the local advisory board, which the local advisory board accepted, and which I'm going to read to you now. This was the proposed resolution for the local advisory board, the mission and the makeup. And I'll get back to mission after I finish this. To protect the mission defined in Pacifica Foundation Articles of Incorporation, the BAA local advisory board resolved that, 1, a new allocation of power and responsibility shall be established among the Pacifica Foundation Board of Directors, the Pacifica Local Advisory Board, the Pacifica Station Managements, and the staff and Pacifica Listener Communities. 2, the local advisory board shall be elected by the listener supporters and the station staffs. 3, the local advisory board's elections shall be conducted so that the elected members reflect and enfranchise all the listener constituencies of each signal area. 4, that the labs shall participate in the oversight of Pacifica national and local finances and policies. Those responsible for the Pacifica financial policies shall be accountable to the local advisory boards and the listener supporters. 5, the labs shall select their own members respectively to sit on the Pacifica National Board of Directors. 6, the labs shall select the management of their respective stations or assist in the selection. 7, the labs, the Pacifica National Board, station staffs, and the listener supporters shall have the right to recall any parties they elect or select. And 8, labs, the Pacifica National Board, and the Pacifica Station shall create mandates for outreach to listeners for diversity and participation. In addition, the exploratory committee of the BAI lab recommended that we change the name of the local advisory boards to station boards. This was adopted by and approved by the local advisory board in November. And we came into this with our exploratory committee with the idea that
even though the previous administration was still controlling the station, that we when and if the station was retaken, which we did in January, that we would hit the ground running, so to speak, and we would already be moving in the direction of getting things set up for a revision of advisory boards and a setup for election to the local advisory board by the listener communities. Now, the last thing I'm going to mention now before we break will be the statement of the Pacifica mission as it is written in the Articles of Incorporation of the Pacifica Foundation back in August of 1948 in the mission statement. And I think that it's important that everyone understand that this is the mission that is written and mandated in the Articles of Incorporation. This is Article 2D, and I'll read them in a particular order. In radio broadcasting operations, to engage in any activity that shall contribute to the lasting understanding between nations and the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors, to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all such groups, and through any and all means compatible with the purposes of this corporation, and to promote the study of political and economic problems and of the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms. And then in radio broadcasting operations, to promote the full distribution of public information, to obtain access to sources of news not commonly brought together in the same medium, and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters vitally affecting the community. And finally, in radio broadcasting operations, to provide outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community, to conduct classes and workshops in the writing and producing of drama, to establish awards and scholarships for creative writing, to offer performance facilities to amateur instrumentalists, choral groups, orchestral groups, and music students, and to promote and aid other creative activities which will serve the cultural welfare of the community. These are the three relevant paragraphs in the Articles of Incorporation of the Pacifica Foundation, and these, to my mind, as a member of the board and as someone who's concerned about who will be coming on to the local advisory board in the future, these are three things that every person that comes on must be committed to. I don't think there's any question about that if those people who come on to the local advisory board are committed to this mission and this mission statement, that we can't go wrong no matter who it is. And it's just a question of selecting who the right person is by whatever means we ultimately determine is the one way we're going to elect people.
Okay, hold up. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. You got 1 minute, Miguel, before we go to our phone calls, because that is our mission for today.
You promised that. I just want to make an announcement here, and I would like to, I said you take a few phone calls to talk a little bit about what caused the crisis in WBAI, specifically in WBAI, and the shape of that struggle, and how we were able to get WBAI back. And this afternoon, from 4 to 11, I think, they're going to be a fundraising for somebody who videotaped all the struggle. And she put together a documentary about the struggle on whose station, WBAI, and that is Liz Buya. And this afternoon is a fundraising to help to have that documentary done. And that, for the people who are interested in having fun, hearing some Latin music, some food, and a nice conversation, of course, about WBI and Pacifica, you can go today, 193 Dean Street, and that is between, let me say the address again, 193 Dean Street, and that is between Vaughn and Hoyt. So you can have some fun this afternoon, and it's a suggested donation. Just help with that documentary, because it could be good to see some people talking before the struggle was over and they behave now.
Let me just say that anyone
I get into all of us say that.
Any